Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, all you traders and investors. Welcome to this brand new edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Thinkorswim and TD Ameritrade. I'm Spencer Israel. As always, here with Joel O'Connor and Dennis Dick, we got another jam-packed earnings show for you again. It is a busy, busy week on that front. Just this morning, Netflix, Goldman Sachs just reporting, Domino's as well. We'll also talk J&J, IBM, it's going to be huge, Joel. It's going to be huge. The show's going to be huge. Plus, we got a really interesting downgrade from Chipotle, from Raymond James. We're going to talk about that as well. At 8:35, we're going to have Nick Shaheen on. He is our resident options guru, the author of Create Income with Option Spreads on MarketFi. In the meantime, though, Joel, tell us how we're doing on the S&Ps this morning.
They're doing pretty darn good here, Spencer. We're trading up 12.5 handles. Made a low just under the close. Now we're up in the 21.30 handle again. Not much resistance until you get to Friday's high at 21.43 1/4. The $50 level is the magnet here in crude. I have thrown in my towel on the short here. Just holding 50 for too long. I thought we'd get a little bit of a pullback, but we'll see. Of course, we have some inventory numbers coming out after the close in tomorrow morning. Gold and silver, a couple days of quiet ranges, trading in the green of 480. Dennis, how you doing on this Tuesday morning?
Still fighting that cold here, Joel, but fighting it for you guys. We're here. No sick days for me.
All right, let's get right into it. I guess you got to start with the Netflix.
Yeah, unbelievable. So we have egg on our face here. Me and Joel both were slightly bearish at going into the report. That was wrong. Anyways, I'm glad I didn't make a trade on it. I talked about the straddle being $11, and maybe that would be a good sale. It would not have been, because he'd be down $18 in it here now. So he'd be down $7 overall if you would have sold at 11, because the thing's trading up at 118. But wow, that is an impressive quarter. That is an impressive hop and pop in the stock. Already 400,000 shares traded here this morning. Hard, I don't know. I've been bearish kind of the whole way up here. So here you are. You're back up here. What's the all-time high here? Give us the all-time high, Netflix.
The all-time high, that was May.
133, right?
Oh, pretty good there, Dennis. Let me take a look here. The all-time high was 133.27. That was made in December.
Now you get back up here. 120. So if you bring up your pre-market chart and after-hours chart, it has just kind of been consolidation station since the first half an hour. The first half hour had the big run-up up to 120, and we just kind of been finding resistance at the big whole numbers. It's what these psychological numbers do. So if you're looking at it here, it's pulled off a little bit from the 120 area, but that's been the level in the after-hours session where it's continuously pulled back from.
Yeah, just have to use the highs from the pre-market session, 121.28. Interestingly, we got to 122.18. That's the yearly high. Hit that in January. Just holding on to the 118 level, I would just say, hey, if you're playing this from the long side, you take out 118. I don't know where this is going to stop, but amazing consolidation here after a straight-up 20-point move, now trading in a 2-point range basically since 5 o'clock last night.
Amazon got the big pop on this as well. As soon as these numbers came out, Amazon started popping up 7, 8, 9 points. And trading actively this morning here in the $822, obviously the last 2 days were ugly here for Amazon, but getting a relief pop here off the Netflix earnings. Give us your quick technical thoughts here, because Amazon's had a rough week, and now we're getting a lot of those losses back. Do you think you find sellers here in Amazon, or is this just a good enough report from Netflix that they're going to come in and buy everything with FANG on it?
Absolutely not here. I think you have fallen off the all-time high. Pre-market high is 823. Now, you got a lot of open area above yesterday's high, 822, even up to 835.74. So, I don't know. I mean, why not take a little bit off? I know the report's probably in a week or so, but, you know, maybe figure a 50% retracement from that all-time high, 845. Let's call it 812, 33, 16. So that would take you 827, 828 area as your first area of resistance.
Let's go to IBM. Spencer's got the report from last night for us as IBM is disappointing the street this morning.
Yeah, Q3 EPS there, $3.29 versus a $3.24 estimate. So that's pretty good. Revenues of $19.2 billion versus $19 billion. That's good as well. They do see fiscal year adjusted EPS at least $13.50 versus a $13.51 estimate. So that's not bad there. Cloud revenue of $12.7 billion over the last 12 months. And shares were up in after-hours action yesterday, but they're falling.
Yeah, it traded up on the initial report. It was trading up a couple of bucks, and it kind of was hanging out near settlement. And here's a little tip. When you're looking at them after hours, and they get the little pop, and then they start to leak it, and they start to give it back, once they start going red, a lot of times they gain momentum going red, because everybody who just bought it and thought it was a good report then starts to panic. And you're looking, it's not like there's, you know, thousands and thousands of people trading, you know, IBM after the report. It's probably a couple dozen traders that are really, you know, the majority of the volume. You know, on a Netflix, it might be a little bit more than that, but on an IBM report, there might just be a couple dozen guys. So you get a few people buying it up. And then it starts to go red on. They're like, whoa, we're in trouble here. We better get out. This thing's going red. And it starts to go down. So it's a one thing for after-hours trading I've always noticed. If the volume is slightly, you know, let's say medium, and the stock goes from green to red, that's, you know, your look of concern. And obviously IBM continued to fall after that. You can see the red candle right after the earnings report then falling another $4. And now trading actively in the 150 handle.
Got a nice pop up to 157.80. That was short-lived. Came down pre-market low, 149.01. Just settling in here at the 151 area. Keeping an eye on that pre-market low, 149.01. Man, the stock just seemed to can't really catch a break here off a halfway decent report. As Dennis mentioned, the close will be a real good number. But I tell you, the daily chart on this is a little bit concerning because you did have the super nice rally here, and now you're starting, I don't know if it's quite the 50% yet, but starting to give it away here. Based on the daily lows, 152.50, that was an important level. That was your three-day low.
Looks like we might turn the show into Trading Tactics Tuesday here because we're getting two education requests from the chat. First, Ecograph is asking us, how do you scalp earnings releases like Netflix, like riding that rise over 20 minutes? Any thoughts on how to do that? It's not really my cup of tea, Netflix, because it's so much volume. Like I was just giving you an example on how I would trade IBM, and I might do something like that if I saw it going from green to red. Netflix has so much volume, you get run over in a hurry. The first minute or two, I'm almost always hands off because let it digest. You've got algorithms coming in like crazy. Some people thinking it's good. Some people thinking maybe that it's bad. You know, in the initial pop, you could get just run over in a stock like Netflix. Like if you were thinking, okay, well, you know, it's popping here. I could see, you know, some resistance up here. Maybe at, you know, the high at 106.97, which was the high from the move. It did pause there for like a few seconds. But then, boom, it's 108, 110. I mean, to control the risk on that is nearly impossible. That's why that first bar, it's so hard to fade the move or even to buy and chase it because it could just, you know, they could pull the rug out from under you and come back down. So really when I'm trading these things, I think there's too much risk in the first 2 to 3 minutes, 5 minutes after the report. I'd love to run it up 20 minutes. And maybe if you were long going to the report, then you, you know, you go with it and, you know, maybe bring up your stop. But the chop is pretty crazy too. I know the candle looks like it's straight up, but in the first minute I was watching the action, the thing was 105, 109, 106, 109. It's just not a lot of liquidity out there and market orders flying at it. Well, not market, but people try to buy the offer or hit the bid and just trying to, you know, get in and out of the stock as quickly as they possibly can. So the first few bars or first few minutes after release is really hard to handle. But then, you know, once you start getting some more information, okay, well, they're liking this report, they're not liking this report, that's when, you know, you start looking. Or maybe there's a consolidation after a big move. And then all of a sudden, that's, you know, when you strike. Because what I always say is, what I'm going to say is I like to trade when the train has not left the station yet. When it starts popping 5, 6, 7 points, that train is gone. It's either going to be a rocket ship or maybe, you know, the rocket ship is going to run out of fuel and it's going to turn around and hit the ground hard or maybe even go through the ground in this case. So it's so difficult to just chase moves. And once it starts popping 5, 6, 7, it's chasing it at that point. So then you got to wait for at least a period of consolidation, maybe a few minutes where it's starting to find something. Maybe there's a turn happening. Maybe it's starting to leak a little bit. That's when you strike. So, you know, the train has now popped. paused, and now you can have time to actually maybe control your risk a little bit more too. But once it just blasts off into orbit 5, 6, 7 points, sure, in hindsight, you know, it was a great buy because it went up another 13. But I've seen a lot of cases with Netflix too where it'll pop 5, 6 points in the first minute, and then boom, they pull the rug out from under. I think last quarter they actually did that, and you can see on the chart the stock ended up losing 15 points. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot in that first few minutes right after the report. And I'm not in this game, I'm not a trader to be a gambler. I know a lot of people equate trading with gambling. I'm all about risk control and how to manage the risk. And really in that first bar, it's very difficult to manage the risk if you're trading that initial headline number.
Right, and just, I mean, look at this. I brought the 1 minute chart up here. So it was basically in 1 minute, it went from under $100, and that same bar went to 118. Then you had a little bit of the pause and then the other run up. Now you're just getting some amazing consolidation. Going into reports or in stocks like this, as opposed to actually trading the equity, I would probably do an option. And I'll tell you right now, if I was, long this thing, let's say I took 100 shares into the report, there's no way that I would have gotten 120. I would have had an offer out there at 110 or 115 and got
hard to get the whole thing.
Yeah, and got picked off on it. But
that would have been a good trade.
Yeah, it would have been a good trade, and I wouldn't have had any regret on it. I think one thing that we've talked about with these after-hour moves is, a lot better sometimes to exit a winning position than it is to try and initiate one, especially in a move like that. There's no stops. Really, the only way to catch a move like that during a regular session would be with some kind of stop order. And, of course, I don't think you can use those in the after hours or the pre-market.
Even that, imagine slippage on a stop. Yeah. That's so scary sounding. You could have a stop at 106. It could execute 111 on that thing.
Easily.
When it's moving that bar easily. So very difficult to manage the risk. And that's why I'm hands off in the first bar. Wait for the consolidation. Wait for, some type of, way to manage the risk. You got a level or something to lean on there. So, and then the second question was from our trader out in UK, FLAK UK. Why doesn't everyone trade after hours and in the pre-market? I've said this for a long time too. If you're a newer trader and you've only been trading for a year, pre-market and after-hours trader is very dangerous because there's no liquidity. You can get in a stock and you just might not be able to get out. And they say, well, you can always get out. Yeah, but you might have to get out, a lot lower there. Like something like Netflix, there is still liquidity in that. But you get some reports, some after-hours earnings reports, and sometimes there's no liquidity there at all. And the stock will just sit there. Like even UAL last night, which we haven't jumped into the number, and this could be a good segue into the report, but I was looking at it after the report. It was a dollar wide. I mean, if you would have bought it on the initial number of 53.03, the best bid was 52, and it never really came above that. So it's to get in and out of that, it's so hard. Then you got to throw out an offer, and then you compete with other people maybe throwing out offers lower than you. Algorithmic penny jumpers in the after-hours session are very prevalent there. So it's tricky. Liquidity is always an issue in the pre-market and after-hours session. There's good opportunity. There's obviously a lot more money to be made because the moves can be extreme, as we saw in the Netflix case, but the risk is higher as well. So that's why I've always said, if you're a newer trader, you watch the pre-market, watch the after-hours action for maybe, to learn from. And, and the levels that we talk about in the pre-market sometimes come into play in the regular session as well. But with liquidity so much lower in the pre-market after-hours session, it's more dangerous trading. So I would say if you're a newer trader, I would avoid it. I'd say if you're a seasoned trader, there's some very good opportunities in pre-market after hours. I have some of my best trades in the pre-market and after hours session. But usually, you're trying to get maybe there's a level, maybe there's something technically to lean on. There's a lot of different strategies involved in the pre-market after hours, but it's very different strategies because liquidity is so much lower.
And just one final note on that. I mean, even if you're not trading it, you can use the information from the pre-market sessions to give you a clue as far as what will happen in the regular session. I mean, for me right now, that 121.28, I mean, that will, at least the first time up there, if it gets back up to that level, you'll find some sellers. To me, this 118 is just, absolutely huge looking at a 15-minute chart. So it's not only trading and looking at the information, it's deriving levels that, you know, also if they coincide with levels on the daily charts, it can give you some good trades.
Deriving levels that the majority of the population, trading population, aren't looking at, too, because most of the people don't look at the pre-market and after-hour session. And that's information that you can use. So I would say, you know, when you have a level that hits 4, 5, 6 times in the pre-market, a lot of times it's going to get hit there in the regular session, too. Why is that? It might just be a big institution unloading. If they're unloading in the pre-market, they're probably going to unload in the regular session at that same level there as well if they haven't, you know, got filled on their entire order yet. So you can identify, you know, where big institutional action is from the pre-market and use that in the regular session as well. Because believe it or not, and I say this, you know, I've said this before too, but everybody thinks, you know, high frequency traders control where the prices go. Maybe in the short run, like, you know, a little scalping, you know, they might, but they're more noise than anything. What really moves price is still institutional order flow. You know, if you've got an institution that's coming in and buying 100,000 shares of Netflix, it's going to move the price up. You got it, you know, have some high frequency traders that's buying 1,000 shares and selling 1,000 shares, it's just going to chop the price around. So, you know, institutions have always been the major players in the markets that move markets, and that's still the case today. They just do it in a different way. They don't throw their big order out there. They're smarter about it. They break it up, smaller algorithms, they chop it up. They try to use VWAP. They use a lot of different trading tactics, but it's still there. And if you're still an institution and, you know, if you can identify a big buyer in the market, it's going to push the stock higher.
All right. Do you want to go into that UAL report?
Yeah, give us the UAL numbers quickly, and then we'll get to the ones from this morning, because there's a ton of earnings reports here. Spencer?
Yeah, I'm here. CEO Oscar Munoz was just on CNBC, if that's your bag. But they reported yesterday after the bell, $3.11 in Q3 EPS versus a $2.88 estimate, sales of $9.91 billion versus a $9.89 billion estimate there. They also see Q4 passenger unit revenue for the U.S. flights to drop between 3.5% and 6.5% year over year.
UAL is just kind of hanging out here. It hasn't decided whether it wants to go up or down. Even with the after-hours trading, it's just kind of hanging out at 53. So very widespread this morning, 51.5 to 53.90. So we can't really tell you much. All I can tell you, if it gets up to that 55 area, all kinds of resistance up there. But it hasn't really had a lot of action in the after-hours to really identify whether they like or don't like this report.
What I like about the setups here in UAL is you have some matching highs and matching lows. 54.50, that's your resistance on the upside. Two highs at 453 and 457. On the downside, 53, that's your number. The last two lows, 298 and 293, needs to hold 53 in order to spark a rally. So keep an eye, matching ranges there in UAL. This is a while. This is really a wild stock, though, so be careful here.
Can be thin.
Yeah, very thin. Under 53, 51.34, that's your three-day low.
Okay, let's get into the big reports here from this morning, and the biggest one is the Goldman Sachs earnings report, which is good. Don't you feel like Goldman always blows it away, though, and the stock doesn't go up that much? I'm, like, having deja vu. It seems like every time Goldman blows the numbers away, stock pops a little bit, but it doesn't pop really very much at all. We've seen this in pretty much every bank stock has blown it away this quarter and given back the gains. So I'm not sure if Goldman's going to do the exact same thing here or not. But it is trading up $2.50 here in the pre-market. Spencer, give us those blowout numbers from Goldman.
Q3 EPS, $4.88 versus a $3.79 estimate. So big, big beat there. Sales, $8.17 billion versus $7.4 billion. So yeah, they crushed it. Earnings was a meatball, and they knocked it out of the park.
But not popping as much as you'd think. So, you know, one level I keep an eye on is just the high from 2 days ago, 172.95. How high have we been here in the pre-market, Joel?
Not quite to that level. I was just going to mention that too. 72.35, that's your pre-market high. Your two-day high, 72.95. You also could see a couple occasions here where you stuck your head over 172 and got snuffed out. But holding here up at 171.25, still up 2.25 points. I mean, a higher price stock, you got to respect the whole 172 handle as resistance.
Johnson & Johnson reported earnings here this morning as well. Decent report here. Stock initially popped up, but now finding sellers and has turned into the red. Give us the numbers on J&J.
$1.68 versus $1.65. Revs of $17.8 billion versus $17.7. As far as fiscal year EPS, they see $6.68 to $6.73. That's in line with the estimate there in the revenues of $71.5 to $72.2 billion. That's on the low end, but still pretty much in line.
A multiple, though. 20 times for Johnson & Johnson. Doesn't that not seem a little expensive to you, Joel?
Very expensive.
20 times for J&J. I mean, when you could buy Apple at 9 or 10 times, when you could buy, you know, the Microsofts and the tech stocks, which are actually still growing a little bit, for 13, 14 times, you really want to go out and pay a 20-time multiple for J&J? I know it's defensive. I know it's got the 2.71% dividend. I know, you know, they're, you know, that's been, you know, what people have loved is these defensive stocks. But, man, 20 times earnings for J&J, it just doesn't sound that attractive to me.
No, you did get a nice pop up there. And here's just interesting to show the pre-market levels and trying to use them. The pre-market high was 1959, your high. Just a few sessions ago was 1963, a psychological number like 120 as well. But J&J fans here, man, this is a dangerous setup here after being as high as it was. Now you're bearing down on the 118 level. I'm looking now. You got four lows right at the 117.50 area, and then another low 117.06. So I don't know if 1750 is the danger area or under 17 even, but the fact that you got a pop, not holding those gains, sitting on a lot of lows here, could be a bad day here for J&J despite a good report.
Domino's Pizza. We've had a couple of people commenting in the chat. Who are Yayo doesn't like the pizza? Domino's, he says he doesn't like Domino's Pizza. I like Domino's Pizza. But anyway, stock. Good numbers here again. Spencer, give us the report, then we'll jump into the technicals.
Yeah, they crushed it. 96 cents versus 89 cents. Sales of $566.7 million versus a $542 million estimate there. Domino's is a prime example of why, you know, having a functional site can help you. And because they got a really good site, and it's really easy to order their food.
I like the pizza.
One thing I want to point out is when we went to their media day a few months ago, because they're over here in Michigan, and one of the things that they said was their biggest concern is cybersecurity. This is a pizza company, and their biggest concern is cybersecurity. That just goes to show, like, how far, you know, ahead they are in terms of thinking about technology than maybe their competitors are, because they're really investing in technology here. It seems to be working.
People breaking into their system and ordering a bunch of fake pizzas?
I don't know.
New all-time highs.
I don't know what to tell you on this one. 58.20, that marks your all-time high in the issue, backed off to 56.25. The former all-time high was 155.10, so if you want to use kind of like a stop-out point on a decline.
Yep.
That was a former all-time high. I don't know what to tell you if you're lying this thing and you're looking for more than 158.20. Good thing to do is throw numbers out, you know, throw some orders out at the half and whole numbers if you wish to exit. Good report, though, from Domino's Pizza.
And we try to always look at previous reports, and you can see there was a gap and go back after the last report in July there. So sometimes Domino's, you know, last time if you were fading the move, you got hurt and never came back in at all and has continued to run up since. Now it's gapping up here again today. I think Joel's right. I think, you know, below 155, maybe you start to get concerned that it might give some of it back. As long as it stays above 155, though, you'd have no levels up here, so I'm hands off on shorting this thing.
Yeah, what an incredible return though on this stock. I mean, how
been unbelievable.
That's a monthly chart there, and holy mackerel! I mean, hit
$7. Yeah, for crisis.
Yeah, well, it did a 3 for 2, so that actually low was 261.
Wow.
Yeah, and look at that nice return on Domino's Pizza.
Unbelievable. A couple other stocks that reported here. UNH reported earnings here this morning. I got it in front of me. I could save you some more. Actually, I can't read my writing, so I will send it to Spencer. I wrote down the numbers, and I'm like, holy cow, am I getting old. I got the chicken scratching going on big time here. I cannot read that. What is it?
217 versus 208. Revs of 46.29 billion versus 46.09 billion. So a beat on the EPS and a beat on the revs.
What do you think of this chart here, Joel? Like, this thing has just been quiet, really. I mean, when you look at it through the week or this year, it's been between 130 and 145. Pretty tight range overall here. I don't know. It's at the support area, I guess.
Yeah, I did reach support. I'm getting a nice bump, trading up 277. I'll just give you your pre-market high of 38.80. You get a little confirmation of a potential resistance in that area, as you had a 38.35 high on the 10th and then another high at 38.93. So if, in fact, we get back into 138 handle, looks to be resistance to me.
Hard to chase this one.
No way.
Oh, so many levels, so many other people underwater in it just a little bit from the last few months. It's just, price has memory, and I just see all kinds of resistance. Anywhere up to 140 looks resistive to me. A couple other ones here. Philip Morris also reported PM. Spencer, you got the Philip Morris numbers. It is popping a buck here this morning.
Q3 adjusted EPS, $1.25. It's a beat by a penny. Net sales, excluding some taxes, $7 billion versus $6.97 billion. They also reaffirmed their guidance for the fiscal year, $4.53 to $4.48 versus a $4.51 estimate. So that's some good guidance.
All these guys, though, the 20 multiples on these defensive stocks, it just scares you long term, because I don't know what the historical multiples here are, but these stocks really aren't growing here anymore. So you're paying 20 times earnings. Love the 4% dividend, but I mean, let's think about this. If it's 20 times you're paying, I mean, you know, how much, you know, 4% dividend here? So most of their money is just going to pay that dividend.
What is the multiple on Procter & Gamble? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me. I probably got pretty fast, though. Okay. Let's see. Race here. Spencer, you want to race me on the multiple on Procter & Gamble?
Yes, I do.
PG multiple looks about 24 times,
oh,
man.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
These
boy.
Things, man. I don't know. I don't. And that's on the current, so that's not going ahead. But they don't grow earnings much here either. I can't pay 20, 22, 24 times here for companies that aren't growing. So I know, you know, it's a defensive issue, and everybody, you know, has been liking defense here. Really, when you look for the last few years, they like getting paid. It's a 1% environment. You're getting 3%, 4% here. But, man, paying 20 times, maybe it's just low interest rates. Maybe you just got to get used to multiples that are 20 times in an interest rate environment that's, you know, 1% or 2%, because people have got to find places for their money here. And I guess it's better to go get a 3%, 4% dividend at Procter & Gamble that you know is probably safe than stick it in your bank at 1%. But I just think, you know, you're paying so much for these things. If for whatever reason any problems happen or anything, or, you know, the interest rates just start a sniff of going higher, these things would all get killed.
Yeah, exactly. 97 even, that's your pre-market high, and you have a couple highs to deal with here, right? The 96.75, 97 area. So above 97, I think things really open up. But right now, coming hard off the 102.50 level. Let's see what happens at 97 bucks.
Okay, moving away from the earnings reports here, one interesting ratings change that I have starred. Chipotle Mexican Grill is now getting downgraded here this morning at Raymond James. I read it in the Pro. Do you have the headline there, Spencer? It was a good headline there from Raymond James.
It's just that Chipotle's lost sales could be permanent. Is the reason,
that sounds scary.
Is the reason for the downgrade.
Chipotle's lost sales could be permanent. So that's a big word to say there. And here you are, and we know that we've been talking about this. You know, it's a multiple. It's got a higher multiple, too. Sales have been coming in, obviously, ever since the E. coli issues. They've never been able to really get, you know, a lift from that. Ackman gave him some love. Shot up to 440. Quickly gave it all back. Shot up to 440 again. The last week and a half, it's given it all back again. I mean, look at this chart. July, it goes from 390 up to 440. Then in August, it slams down from 440 back to 390. Then September, it climbs back up to 440 again. Then gives it all back a week and a half later, goes back down to the 390 area. Then it goes all the way back up to 440 again, and now it comes all the way back to 390. I mean, if you've been paying this from 390 to 440, congratulations. You could have grabbed 50 points up, 50 points down, 50 points up, 50 points down, 50 points up, 50 points down here again. I'm not selling it in the 390 handle. If it's worked 1, 2, 3, 4 times, maybe it's going to, you know, but I'm not going to be shorting it with Raymond James here today. Day. I'd actually think I'm more of a buyer down here because it's worked so many times. I mean, it starts going down to 380, then you probably cut out. But long term here, it's still a scary stock for me to get on board with the valuation, for the exact reason that Raymond James is citing, is that I don't know when these sales are going to come back. You could say, you know, they were lining up, and I know Cramer was pounding the table that they were lining up with these stores. He's quiet on it now because the stock's way down here at 390 here again, but I just don't know when the sales are coming back. It's why I don't want long-term, but short-term, TradeTheRange.com.
Yeah, it's a wild range of that. Did Kramer mention the lines were at the bathrooms, though, and not at the counter?
You dropped that joke last time. I threw the softball for you again.
All right, I don't know. 384.77, that marks the low of the move here. Dennis has mentioned it, you know, the buy range between 385 and 390. I guess it's one of those things where, you know, if you cover short, maybe in this area, I don't know. So many times.
I'd be covering my short. Yeah, I was short this thing, I'd be like rigging the register this morning. But that's just me.
Right, until it takes out the bottom of that range. You have to respect the support here. You had a few bumps up to 440. The most recent was actually this one back here is when Ackman got involved, gave it all back, came back. So respect the range here.
Yahoo downgraded at Needham. They are citing concerns that Verizon might walk from this deal. Now, I wouldn't be overly concerned with this, though, because even if Verizon walks, you know, 90% of Yahoo's value is still Alibaba. So you're talking about the extra 10%, really, that, you know, the $4 billion that Verizon's going to dish out for the Yahoo assets that, you know, is potentially in jeopardy here with, you know, all the breach and all the other stuff there. That's just Needham's thoughts that Verizon could walk here. Obviously, Yahoo shareholders are so much are just shrugging it off here because the stock is trading up still 0.5%. Alibaba's up 1%. We know Yahoo tracks Alibaba very closely, so it's still an Alibaba tracking stock as far as I'm concerned.
$41, that's the level you want to keep on if you're owner of Yahoo. Had the move up. I think that was on Baba moving up, as Dennis mentioned. That low was 40.93. Still trading comfortably above that at 42 even here in the pre-market trading. Right at yesterday's high, 41.94. And then you also have some sellers lurking in the lower 42 handle. Your 2 and 3 day highs, 42.08 and 42.25.
Yahoo will report earnings here after the bell tonight. Also going to report earnings after the bell tonight is Intel, and they are catching an early upgrade. Barclays coming out last night, upgrading Intel this morning here, and stock is trading up 1.4% on that upgrade ahead of the report.
Yeah, boy, that's a bold move, huh?
Isn't it? Coming out. You don't see that very often, so I guess we got to give them some props. They got some guts coming out here, upgrading it ahead of the report.
Intel here trading up in the pre-market a stealth 55 cents. That's a big move for Intel if you think how much stock you take to move in the regular session. I'm keeping an eye on 38 bucks. That was your high on October 11th. High of the move, 38.36. Actually, after you made that 38.36 high, the previous 4 days it was flanked by highs from 38.16 to 38.32. So big level here if you want to ring the register ahead of the report in Intel.
Don33 is asking us about a recent IPO, NTNX. I struggle with these things because there's just not a lot of information. I know Fari likes to have at least 90 days of trading information before he's trying to make a technical call on something. We've only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This only has only been trading 12 days. So it's difficult to just come in here and, you know, say, okay, well, it's a big technical level. One thing, you know, we can do a technical on anything, though. 2650 is where this thing started up back on the 30th, and it ran all the way over $45. I actually got up to 46.78. Just quietly here, it's given back 30% over the last 10 sessions. So as people try to still discover what the value of this thing is or what the price should be, big hole numbers coming to play. 30 bucks, got down to 30.30 yesterday, did bounce off that level. Below 30, I'd start looking at the IPO price at 2650. But I guess you just play the psychological levels here because there's just not a lot of other information out there for us to trade technically off of.
Yeah, 30 bucks from the low from yesterday's session, 30.30, you had the close there. You want to see it just keep a bid here. You don't want to see it, you know, open up at 31.40 and then be back under $31. A lot of people maybe regretting getting caught involved in that move to 46. One other IPO, Dennis, and I wanted to ask you about this, and I haven't been able to do a lot of research on the stock. Have you seen TTD? It's called the Trade Desk Incorporated.
I've seen it. Yeah. I don't know what they do, though. What do they do?
I mean, it's like giving information to trade the markets.
Oh, this could be us.
Yeah.
This could be like our IPO, pre-market prep IPO.
Right. And did have a nice run up. Has been trading between 26 and 27, but I'm going to have to do a little fundamental research on this one. Looks like it interesting company. 26, as I said, 27 has been resistance just under that. And another IPO that has really gotten beat up as of late, Twilio. Had the run from $23.76 up to nearly to $71. And now, boy, oh, boy, how many down? Boy, this could be a record. I might have to buy some calls on this one. Look at this. Well, actually, I did look at the – I might have to buy the common in this one because I looked at the spreads on the options market, and you could drive a truck through them. But let's see. You had a 61.47 close. That was on October 5th. You had 1, 2, 3 out of 4, 4 to 5, 5 out of 6, 6 out of 7, 7 out of 8 down days here. So we'll see if we can find a double bottom or something to lean on here.
It looks wide open here, yet I don't see a trade here. Just because you got a chart stock, you don't have to make a trade. Wait for your setups. That's the whole key. You know, Warren Buffett, you know, is always one. I don't have to swing at every pitch. You know, you don't have to be swinging at these curveballs and these sliders and all these. Wait for them to throw a fastball up the middle. You know, wait for the simple trade, the nice setup there. Because when you look here and you look at, you know, something like this Twilio here, it's just going to go down every day, $2, $3, $4. Who knows where it's going to bottom out? The trade really was back, and I can tell you when it took out the 60. Because it put the bottom in. And I'm just looking, you know, to the dailies there, and I'm looking at the October the 4th, 60.26. The next day's low was 61. Then it came back the next day at 60.07. So you can see it wanted to try to hold 60. As soon as it took it out, though, the next day at 59.27, look, if you would have shorted it going through that 60, you would have taken zero heat. And it's now 16 points, you know, further. And like me and you with scalper blood, we've been long gone by now. But, you know, if you're a good swing trader there and you're willing to risk a buck or two, you know, on the going through that 60, that was your trade. But now, you know, you could have said the same thing through 50, but it was only there for one day. But I like it, you know, when there's two lows and then on the third day it takes it out, because we used to always say, J.C. Peretz is one that said that, I've heard him say it too, is no such thing as a triple bottom. And a lot of times that is the case. And when, you know, it cuts through there on the third time's a charm, sometimes, you know, there's no heat. And that was a no heat short for you there. So that was the trade. Right now I don't see a setup here, so I'm just hands off.
All right. Nick Shaheen's going to come on here, so let's take a quick break and bring in our options expert.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Alconin, along with Dennis Dick, Spencer Israel running the boards here, and we have Nick Shaheen on the line, options expert, author of Create Income with Option Spreads. Nick, how you doing on this turnaround Tuesday?
I'm doing great. A little sore, hard workout yesterday, but feels great.
All right. Great to hear, Nick. All right. First, let's go to the hot stock of the day, Netflix here. How did you interpret their report?
Well, obviously, the market loves what they saw. You know, I tried to parse the words, the performance they did as far as what they're doing. To me, there's a caution. Obviously, I can't go long it at this level. But the word of caution is, it sounds like, you know, for them, growth was the reason Wall Street gave it slack on valuation. And they took the biggest part, which is China, and they put it into experiment mode. They sounded like they gave up on doing it themselves, and instead they're going to try this licensing their product over there to stream with the people that are already existing there. So it sounds like it's an experiment, but what if that experiment doesn't work? Then they took their biggest potential in the growth, which is China, and they threw it away. So basically they gave up on China and now they're trying something new. And if that new, the something new doesn't work out, then we're back to, you know, is that growth going to happen the way we thought it was going to be? So great for people who are on board. I lost some money on some puts, but it was a lottery ticket. to do it for earnings. It's always a lottery ticket, small money that won't break my heart. It'll make my day if it hits, just like a real lotto. But it's not as rosy as I think, unless I'm reading it wrong. I don't think it's as rosy as people are selling it to be.
What do you think of it up here at like 118, 120 now, you know, digesting it after the report? Do you think like it's good enough report that people might continue to come in and buy it here? Or do you think this is going to be one that's going to continue to fade?
I've never chased a stock up 20%. Yeah. So if you're asking me what I would do, I definitely wouldn't get it. Even if I miss out on upside money, if I'm not on board, I'm buying somebody else's profits. So I would let it do whatever it wants. I missed it. And I will catch it if it falls back down, but there's no way I could chase it at these levels.
Let's talk Tesla here. You were looking at a setup in this stock. We were talking on the show yesterday that we were saying it's starting to look ugly. You're of the same opinion.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's scandal, today is going to be buoyed by Netflix's performance. All the Momos and all the companies that are going to be reporting soon will be infected by the optimism that Netflix delivered. Tesla, yesterday's scandal is a little scary. It could be a start of something bad, technically speaking. Now, this is to pile on to my bearish opinion of the company from a fundamental basis. It is a, you know, unproven company as far as delivering profits, and execution is questionable, and add to it the technical perspective of it. You know, it may just shrug it off, but technically it could invite some momentum sellers. It does have its fans, so it will find footing somewhere. People, you know, Elon will tweet something beautiful and it will run.
I know. Constant tweeting my stock up. That drives me nuts. So
yeah.
Well, give us a level though here on Tesla. So, you know, we started 200, looked like resistive here, obviously, and now it's starting to break through that level here. Any like targets here on anything? I know if you're looking for some.
Sure. I mean, the way I traded Tesla for my people, we did an iron condor. That was a nice win. And level wise, it was so wide that we didn't even revisit it. It was up in the 240s and the 160s. So we sold the risk out there and it brought in a pretty penny. And then I said, okay, well, we won on this one. Why not just close it and walk away and leave some money on the table? And I believe we collected about a dollar in premium. It was a January spread. There was a version for November. So if you collect 40 cents for November and it's like, you know, 8% on each side or 10% on each side of the iron condor, it makes it a pretty healthy yield without much worry.
Moving on here at Google, you want to talk this one here as well. It's also getting a benefit of the Netflix numbers here this morning. Google's trading up about $7. What are you seeing on this one?
Google had a beautiful setup recently, technically, to blow out upside, and then it kind of lost it. So this will have, you know, as of yesterday, the candles are already tight. The energy was collected going into the earnings. So that's always good for a company that's a quality company or perceived quality like Google. I mean, they print money so far. So it may have this pop right here with Netflix may bring it up to the breakout line that's in purple that I had drawn out there. And it if that coincides with the earnings and they deliver good earnings, then look out above. So a lottery ticket, if I were to play it on Google, it would be to the upside just because my overall portfolio is short on the longer term. Long on the shorter term. So on the weeklies, I'm selling heavier credit put spread versus the longer dated credit call spreads that I have. And that's how I'm managing my risk. So for Google, it could deliver to the upside. But the trick is that it is big enough that it will drive indices up and ETFs. So be careful how you trade those. They can be a play on Google earnings. So if you want to play upside and you don't want to waste money, then why not play it via the Qs, for example? And if Google runs, then you carry some of the run with it. And if it falls, you don't lose all your premium just because Google reported.
What do you think here? And I don't know if Joel's fell asleep over there.
I'm here.
I was like waiting for you two, three times. Like, well, Joel, I don't know what's going on here because Nick's giving us some pretty good info. But anyways, I'm just wondering, what do you think of, you know, like you look at Google and it's trading like 25, 26 times earnings. And then you look at Johnson & Johnson trading like 21, 22 times earnings. Wouldn't you rather want to own a Google that's growing like crazy at 24 or 25 or 26 times earnings than a Johnson & Johnson at 22 times earnings that isn't growing at all?
That is 100%. And because I think Johnson is a div payer, right? So there's also...
I think why people are crowding these trades. But...
Well, look at the Johnson & Johnson now that you mentioned. I'm going to throw a chart in there. I would not want to be long a chart doing this on a line. Tiptoe around a line that could be a breakdown. It's been a base recently. What is that line? 117 and a half-ish eyeball?
Yep.
So I don't. If I'm long it, I'm worried a little bit. I'd want to buy some puts, maybe sell some calls to finance the puts, or stock replace completely, like get out of the stock if I'm green and just replace it with some cheap debit call spreads to still stay long the stock if I insist on doing that. But there will be all these div payers will move if the rates go up, right? Because that'll be an alternative to, yeah, you know, either I get dividends from here with risk or I'll put it in a bank with rates.
Yeah, I don't know if rates are going to be getting up to 3 or 4, yeah, 3 to 4% anytime soon. Here, I want to talk to you a little bit though about the financials here. Now, J.P. Morgan comes out with a good report, hits resistance, sells off pretty hard. Bank America, good report, rally, sells off. Goldman Sachs, the same kind of thing here. Is the street just giving you, you know, good earnings, giving you a little bit of a chance of getting a little bit cheaper here, or is it selling the news and the financials?
I've been, I don't want to say bearish the financials, but less enthusiastic the financials. Since I've been on your show, I've said there's a lid on XLF before it split or did whatever it did at whatever number it was, and it held. So as long as I continue seeing that lid, and it's still there, meaning I don't chase them. Everybody bought them when they said, okay, rates are going to rise, let's buy banks. And I said, wait, they have a leash on them. There's a wall in front of them, and they all came back down. So I still see that kind of resistance. So if they run a little bit, I give them a little bit of room. But I think even if they raise rates, the Fed, they say, okay, that's good for the financials. But we've talked about this before. I think it's a temporary pop. So if the financials rally on a Fed rate hike and the markets continue falling like they did last December, the financials didn't continue rallying, right? So they will turn around and join the market, whatever direction it's running.
All right, Nick, let's go to Twitter here. And we haven't done our Twitter routine yet. Under $17 here. Nobody wants to buy poor Twitter here. Coming in, I mean, I'm trying to be bullish this stock, and just gives you absolutely no reason to. I think the next quarter, they're either coming into a huge print and they're going to get this thing back over 20, or it's just going to be just another quarter of the same.
Okay, so what did I tell you about Twitter? The management will find a way of messing things up. They had everybody on the hook, and they managed to do some stuff and say some stuff behind the scenes to make everybody, you know, walk away from the date. I had total faith in the government messing it up. I knew it was not going to be bought out, and I said it on your show. But the best way to go long Twitter, if you want to play this, is to sell some risk at a level where you accept buying Twitter as a stock and take the money and buy calls with it. I'll give you an example. So if I think 13 is a safe place to own Twitter or a decent value, or 14, I'd sell the 14 puts, collect 60 cents, and then buy some calls with that and wait for the headline to be bought out. If it falls to 14, I own the stock. So selling puts is risky because you get put the stock at that level. So if it falls to zero, you've lost $14. If it falls to 12, you lost $2 per contract. And that's the best way of doing it if somebody is willing and able to own the stock at the level they sell it. You can do a put spread. So if you sell the 14 put and buy the 13 put, so you collect the difference between the two, which is 60 and 37, do the math. You collect that money, you buy a debit call spread, you know, for some upside if it ends up rallying.
Nick, just going to ask you a couple other stocks here. This morning we had IBM report, and IBM is disappointing the street here. I'm starting to feel, it's kind of weird, but I'm starting to feel like a move here overall where, you know, we had those stocks coming in favor, the old school tax stocks and the non-FANG stuff. And it feels like it's kind of cycling back into the FANG now, and they're starting to sell some of these older school. Do you kind of feel that too? Where, you know, we had this trade going a year and a half ago where everybody had their own Facebook and Netflix and Google and Amazon, and they were selling the stocks like the Microsofts and the Ciscos and the Intel. Now I feel like, you know, it's starting to reverse here and come back into that trade here again. And IBM is a pretty good, you know, old school tech stock example here.
Wait. Is it old school? What do they do? It's not old school stuff.
They do
what? They do a new school stuff?
They do what?
Yeah, remember, I said it on your show. They're a startup. They have no idea what they're doing.
So they're completely, I'm just saying, as it's been around for 100 years, I feel like.
Yeah, but it's a completely new business. Themselves. So, yeah, they're trying to reinvent themselves. So they're not old school.
Well, maybe that's a good thing.
It's just like Twitter, I have faith that management does not know what they're doing. They are putting their eggs in Watson. And instead of chasing whatever else is chasing out there, but sorry to interrupt, but technically it's bad. Fundamentally, it's bad. I have no reason to chase this one.
So you're not like an IBM, even though it has a 3.7% dividend.
Well, I don't buy stocks in general. And if I did, dividend would not be the reason I'd buy them.
Yeah.
Unless they're a sure thing. And there are very few sure things out there. But IBM is not one of them. It is not a sure thing.
Last stock I wanted to ask you, GoPro. This one was obviously loved, then hated. And then the last few, you know, through the summer, it was starting to get loved again. Went from $10 all the way up to $17. Until the last week and a half, they pulled the rug out from under, and the stocks went from $17.5 down into the $13 handle. It was up a little bit here this morning at $14.20 here. But what are you seeing in GoPro?
Reversion to the mean. Here's GoPro. I'm throwing it in there. Look at the blue-red area. It's just trading the middle. This is just a simple regression line of the last 10 months or so. So GoPro, speaking of sure things, you know, it's still a camera company. I got excited a little bit on the last rally. I said, okay, maybe now they're offering us a story about being in the drone business. But, you know, until they show us some crumbs there, what's there to buy? It is a camera company. And I've used some cameras that are pretty incredible. I own two GoPros, but I'm not rushing to buy the latest model. I just needed something that goes in the water and the sand, and I don't have to worry about it. And then it's it. It's not practical. It takes great pictures, but it's just still a camera company. They've sold us on the story of being a YouTube killer up to 90. And I said, what are you guys doing? And luckily, they found their way and sold it all the way down here. And now they're trying to sell us on a different story. But still, you know, it's still a camera company until they deliver on some of the stories they're feeding us.
We've been on the line with Nick Shaheen. He's the author of Create Income with Option Spreads, joining us here on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Thanks a lot, Nick. We'll speak to you again soon.
Can't wait for it.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, 8:52 here, and we are going to bring on Garrett Kohler here. He's in charge of marketing here at Benzinga. And Luke Jacoby, and we're going to come and talk about some special features on Benzinga Pro. We'll be right back.
And welcome back, traders and investors. I'm here with Luke Jacoby. Bringing Luke back because we had, I think actually Luke had a couple questions that he got from his time on the show last week. So Luke, you wanted to come on in and answer them.
Yeah. Don't want to take up too much of your guys' time. Thanks for having me back on, Spencer. But we had several people that were pre-market prep listeners from last week call in and ask a couple questions about the platform, so I just wanted to go over them really quick. Biggest question we were getting was, okay, I see Benzinga's got all of this, you know, great content, but how do I find the stuff that's really unique or the stuff that, you know, will really make me money, give me some trading ideas, you know, show a bunch of opportunities throughout the day? So I just want to take a second to show you all how to do that. Over on the right-hand side of your Benzinga Pro Newswire, there is this little button that says Filters. If you go ahead and bring that up, you get a little filter module, and it says Categories on it. And so we've got a couple categories that are really, really unique to us that are you know, bound to, and we get a ton of really, really good feedback on that, you know, open up a lot of trading ideas and opportunities. First one that you want to make sure you have checked off is our market moving exclusives. I'm going to go ahead and press that one. this is the really, really good sexy Benzinga content. This is the stuff we're originating. We're talking to companies. We're talking to funds. We're talking to government officials, et cetera, to get, you know, a good grip on you know, stories that we are originating and that we are breaking. The other one that I'm going to have you go ahead and check off is exclusives. This is not necessarily, you know, as sexy or as market moving as the original box I checked, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. So, for example, it might be some sell-side analyst comments that we get exclusive to us. It might be an investor relations person saying, you know, hey, I can't comment on this.
Or it could be like some context, right, on a move.
Exactly, right? So if Smith & Wesson's up 10%, we can't figure out why. It may be because there was some FBI hearing. It's not, you know, super, you know, it's not going to move the stock 20%
right,
like the market moving exclusive ones are.
Right.
But you know, it justifies the move. Very last one that I'm going to show off right now is also this rumors button right here. Definitely want to make sure you go ahead and click that. These are you know, the things that float around the market that have the ability and often do move stocks. You know, we're not saying, hey, you know, here's this rumor. We're trying to blow up the rumor. We're saying, hey, there's this thing going around. This is why Staples is up 5% today, just for awareness. You know, Bloomberg, Reuters, they don't report on this kind of stuff. So it's really, really unique to Benzinga. It gives our guys a lot of trading opportunity.
And it's not always a case necessarily of it being, the rumor being true, but the fact that it's out there and it's being passed around.
Exactly.
Right.
And again, that's some of the rare reporting that we do that we get a ton of positive feedback on.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Luke.
All right.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You,
I know we had some questions from the listeners last week, so I appreciate you coming back on. In the meantime, Dennis, you know, we haven't talked imbalances yet on this show. Can you give it? Are there any notable ones?
Yeah, we'll take a look here. Alibaba, 56,000 to buy. Twitter, 20,000 to buy. Just looking, it's pretty much buy balances across the board, and that is very typical of a day that you're going to be up 17 handles here on the S&P. So, you know, if I'm really talking about today overall, it feels obviously like a risk-on day. So that is concerning to me if I'm buying a defensive stock. So remember, just because, you know, the market's up doesn't mean all stocks are going to go up. If you look this morning, a lot of your stocks are trading higher. Even Philip Morris is trading higher on its earnings report. Might just be a little bit cautious on some of these, just simply because these are defensive stocks that often do move opposite to the market. You know, in the last little while, everything seems to be moving together, but we're starting to see some separation. Some of the old style trades come back here, and I wouldn't be surprised some of the defensive stocks do lag here a little bit today. Johnson & Johnson is now trading down on its earnings report here, and when people are putting risk on, they're taking money out of these defensive stocks, these stocks, you know, that have the 2021 multiples there with the nice dividends, and they're putting them into the Netflixes and the Googles and, you know, the stocks that, you know, have the more higher growth rate there. So just consider that rotation there, and I'd be very careful, you know, on some of the defensive issues today, even like an AT&T and Verizon. Verizon does have a 44,000 share buy and balance, but AT&T actually has a 30,000 share sell on balance here this morning. So the only bigger balance is, I'm just going back to that. So that's, you know, just a tangent I went on. But Sprint, I see Sprint trading up here 16 cents in the pre-market, 478,000 shares to buy in Sprint. So, you know, that's one thing if you consider an AT&T and Verizon. I don't know how much Sprint influence can have on it, but Sprint is trading up pretty substantially in the pre-market. So overall, risk on day. Obviously cautious with some of the defensive issues.
Real quickly here, Ambarilla, we got asked about that in the chat here, AMBA. Trading up 70 cents here, you got a good number on the upside that will be the key to any continued upside. Two highs, 63.83 and 3.86, those are the highs from your last two sessions. Above that, things open up in the 64 handle, one stopping point, 441, but potential breakout above 64 in Ambarilla. All right, 8:59. Spencer, you want to preview Wednesday's show?
Sure. We got Tommy Lackey on tomorrow, as we do every Wednesday. He's our Wednesday regular. He's the managing partner and portfolio manager at Relativity Capital. advisors love his scans, love his charts, love all the work Tommy does. So looking forward to having him on the show. If you missed any part of our show today, you can catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Just search for Benzinger Premarket. Don't forget to check it out if you're interested. Joel and Dennis's two-day trader workshop. I'm putting the link to that in the chat right now. You can just Google Benzinger two-day trader workshop. It is just under a month away now here in Detroit. Day and a half, a full day Saturday, one day Sunday. So check it out there, and you'll be able to meet Joel, Dennis, Nick Shaheen will be there, and Marie Band will be there. I'll probably stop by, not that you'll want to see me. I know we've had a few people from the chat say they're coming, so excellent. Looking forward to seeing you there, and the link is in the chat now. Also, as Luke just came on and mentioned, Benzinger Pro. You can get a free two-week trial today. Just go to pro.benzinger.com. You can also call us at 313-960-2000 if you want to learn more, or maybe you don't want to get it today, you want to get a demo, or you want to get a free trial. Those are your sources for doing that. Please always remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. That's it for us for the day, so we're going to let you go. Hope everybody has a good rest of their day, and I hope you trade well. Good luck, and we will see you guys tomorrow.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.